We're talking today with Dr. Tammy Horn Potter. She's the Kentucky State Apiarist with the Kentucky Department of Agriculture. Tammy, you were talking before we started the tape here, and you came to beekeeping really as someone that didn't have much background in that, and a hobby became your profession. Tell me a little bit about how that happened.
So, as I was telling you, I was determined never to do math, science, or agriculture when I went to college. And I was very clear with my advisor on this. And at that point in time, you could do that. You could go to college for 4 years and graduate with an English degree. It was what my background became. And so I became an English professor and really loved that. But my grandfather needed help with his beehives one summer, and I had just finished my dissertation, and I thought it would be, you know, a day's worth of labor was what I offered him initially. And so I went to help him with his bees, and I just knew immediately when we opened the hives that I should have always kept bees. You know, from that point forward, you know, everything became specific. You know, trees had a bloom time and date. Flowers had bloom times. And, you know, some were nectar producers, some were pollen producers, some did both, some did not. You know, it was an entree into a world of specificity. Having avoided math and science so long, you know, that was, I began to love it. So, you know, just from that point forward in 1997, I just kept walking towards the areas of science that bees led me to, you know, whether that was biology, whether that was horticulture, whether that was chemistry, architecture in some cases, woodworking, you know, I just kept walking. And so then that led me to being invited to be on a surface mine tour, and I saw just thousands of acres of non-native fescues and thought, well, we really need to see if we can change the best management practices to include pollinator habitat. And that happened in 2007. I started trying to write grants, which my first profession was very good at training me to write and write on deadline and deliver the things I had, you know, said I was going to do. And of course, with grants, you have to do budget, so I had to do math. And but from 2008 until 2014, that's what I did. I wrote grants to help fund that work on surface mine sites to get pollinator habitat as a reclamation practice. So in 2014, the previous apiarist had decided to retire. The Commissioner of Agriculture at the time asked if I would consider applying for the position. And since I felt like I was already doing the work of an apiarist, I went ahead and applied for it, and I've loved it. It's been a different position because I wanted to prioritize hive health. And the position initially had been one for marketing honey, but my thought was, if we don't have healthy hives, then we have nothing to market. So I got a grant, a USDA honeybee health grant, and I take samples now from apiaries whose beekeepers volunteer their bees for these samples, and we finally have some baseline data now from apiaries across the state.
So as we look at apiaries across the state, and especially someone who may have thought about keeping bees before but never really pursued it, what are some of the benefits for keeping bees beyond having the product of honey to sell?
So any of your specialty crop growers are going to need pollination. I mean, that's just that you know, talking about biology, that's just the basics. You have to have pollination for 90 crops out of the 115 that are grown in the United States. So some of those crops in Kentucky are going to be your apples. Tomatoes need bumblebee pollination, not honeybee pollination, but they still need pollination. Pumpkins tend to profit better from a type of bee called a pumpkin bee, a pepinapis bee, but honeybees are generalist, and so they help seed set. Your peaches, your apples, your brambles, especially blackberries. I think there are quite a few farmers that have diversified from tobacco into the brambles, and you have to have pollination for those. No two ways about that. So you're going to get seed set, which is going to be bigger fruit. It's going to be better tasting fruit. In fact, when I'm working with kids, you know, one of our tests that we do for pollination is we'll cut an apple and count the seeds, because that's one way you can tell if a fruit has been pollinated or not. So from a farmer's standpoint, you know, somebody who's doing specialty crops, especially, you need to have that aspect of your business plan in place, whether you're keeping the bees or you're having somebody bring bees onto your property. Pollination is a non-negotiable. You've got to have it. For the row crop farmers, research is still out on soybeans. We know that bees work soybean plants because some of the pollen analysis from Western Kentucky show pollen significantly in significant amounts in some of the pollen analyses that we have done from that area of the state. We don't know necessarily to what extent that honeybees provide seed set for soybeans. When we're talking about corn, which is another important row crop, at least in Kentucky, because of our distillery industry, bees love corn pollen. They just absolutely love it. And so even though people kind of are dismissive about some of the chemicals that corn growers need to have to use if they're going to have a good corn crop, you know, they're like, oh, the wind pollinates corn, not bees. We don't have to worry about that. And that's not quite true. With the acreages that we devote to corn, and the fact that corn expresses a sugary substance, it's a process called gutation, you know, we do kind of have to worry about that because honeybees sometimes may have nothing else to work because of the acreages devoted to corn. So they're going to get that pollen where they can get it. And so corn is impacts hive health more than what the general person, general audiences suspect it to be.
I know you focus much of your work at the state level on hive health. Is that one of the big challenges for someone that's getting started in beekeeping, is maintaining healthy hives? And what are some of the other
absolutely.
Challenges?
Absolutely. I mean, I think most, if somebody is even considering keeping bees, you know, they probably had a family member keep bees before. And what they remember is, you know, a person who put a box of hives in the backyard and never had to go into them except to take honey or to maybe requeen the hive. And it's a different ballgame now. And so a big challenge initially is because you have a lot of people who get started because they catch a swarm. So they don't have... They don't have a sense of bee biology as a background. So there's a learning curve there with that. In addition, they don't have a background in the parasite biology that impacts honeybees. So, you know, one of the biggest challenges I have is to get beekeepers to understand that their honeybees have a mite, which is about like a tick that's on their bees, And when that mite population gets too big, the colony will suffer, not only from the mite's damage, which is feeding off of the bodies of the bees, but also the viruses that this mite is transferring to the bees. You know, many of our apiaries are showing viruses, you know, some as high as 5 viruses now. So that's a big challenge for anybody who's just starting to consider the idea of being a beekeeper is, you know, there is a learning curve, and you start walking that path, and then you've got to kind of think, okay, well, what are my bees eating? And you have to start becoming aware of blooming patterns in your neighborhood. And, you know, does that particular area have enough blooming plants? Or is it devoid of blooming plants and all you have is a lot of grass? Because grass is the number one crop in the United States right now. So there are some issues there. And I think for women and people who have back problems and maybe some of us who are getting older, you know, I think the equipment is a challenge. This is still an industry that's dominated by a 10-frame deep hive that can be over 100 pounds in the middle of summer with 70,000 stinging insects in it. And, well, you know, anybody in their right mind, you know, can be intimidated by that. And so because we don't show people that we have diverse hive styles now, they choose something from the 19th century when I think really we've outgrown that technology, that innovation. There's a lot out there.
Started to talk about equipment. For someone that wants to keep bees to produce some honey that they can then sell as a farm product, are there some certain sizes, or, you know, once they do their homework, they learn some biology, some things about the parasites and other things, is there maybe a size that they can start with that might be on just one or a small hive that could end up being more cost efficient in the long term, or how does that all work? And how much of a return on investment could people expect from beekeeping?
Okay, so what I tell beginners who have no hives whatsoever is to spend one seasonal year going to local bee associations. Go to as many as you can. You know, throw your money, if you're going to throw it towards bees, you know, beekeeping anyway, towards education. You know, really educate yourself prior to spending one dime on honeybees or equipment. And the second thing I tell people who are considering beekeeping is to invest in, you know, one of the bee periodicals or magazines. There's one called Bee Culture, and there's another called American Bee Journal. And for $25, you know, they'll get a monthly journal, which will teach them the seasonality of this particular type of insect. But really, I want them to understand that there are a lot of different options now than there were 20 years ago when I was helping my granddad. You know, for instance, you know, there are now polystyrene hives, which are kind of like a foam, styrofoam hive that is much less weight for a person who is keeping bees. And, you know, so you don't automatically have to get wooden equipment if, in fact, you have, like I said, back problems, or if you're a little bit intimidated of some of the heavier equipment. There's something called an 8-frame medium, which is an adaptation of what used to be the conventional hive, which we called a 10-frame deep. And that's simply 10 movable frames in a deep, what we call a deep brood box, brood chamber. But the polystyrene hives to me are a game changer. I've been doing this 20 years. I finally got married in 2015, And my husband is the one that kind of turned me on to that. And now we are converting all of our hives to the polystyrene hives. I will say this, they don't last as long. But given that the both of us are you know, looking at 50, you know, we're not going to last as long as, you know, if we keep doing things the way that we used to, you know. So just make people aware, you know, that it's okay to look at other types of hive technologies.
As you look at beekeepers across Kentucky, talk about some of the most common ways that they're marketing honey, and then maybe some things that you see as offering real potential for the future in terms of Kentucky produced honey.
Well, I think some of the more astute beekeepers are doing they're beginning to work with creamed honey, which is, you know, most honey naturally crystallizes, but creamed honey speeds up that process of crystallization. And why that matters is that if the process of crystallization happens very quickly, then the crystals are really, really tiny and minute. And so it produces a type of creamed honey which literally melts on your tongue. It's almost like cake frosting. It has that consistency. And so there's some neat creamed honeys out there that are being infused with bourbons that simply can't, I mean, it just flies off the shelf. So that's been some of the newer marketing techniques that Kentucky beekeepers are doing in this state. Seen some really good cinnamon honey. I've seen a beekeeper in Western Kentucky take crystallized or creamed honey, if you will, and infuse it with sorghum. Because sorghum, I think to me, there's a nostalgia with sorghum. And people either really love it or they really hate it because it's, you know, it's a very strong flavor. But by melding that with creamed honey, it makes it a really gentler flavor, if you will. Some other products, I just gave as a gift a jar of pollen. There's a beekeeper in Allen County named Harris Overholt who traps bee pollen. And it is so much better in terms of quality and taste than what you would buy in your natural food store, because he doesn't dry it like, you know, what sometimes happens when a beekeeper collects pollen from a hive. It has a high degree of moisture, and so the pollen can actually get mold on it if you don't put it in the refrigerator or, you know, some other, and what many people do will just dry it. But then it begins to taste like granola. So so he does really well with his pollen business. I like to mention that because I think many people don't realize that that's a byproduct of the hive. Many people doing really well with beeswax products, both in terms of lotions and candles. Beeswax has a real high degree of burn, so you don't get flames. Rather, you don't get smoke off of a beeswax candle like you do with, say, paraffin candles or something like that. So beeswax candles are really considered the green good la creme of candles. So we've got a lot of beekeepers doing really neat things with their products and doing well with them.
And is there room for more beekeeping in Kentucky, in your view?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the United States every year imports approximately 350 million pounds of honey. The domestic beekeepers simply cannot meet demand in both honey and good, clean beeswax. I mentioned beeswax candles. The other industry that really needs good quality beeswax is the cosmetic industry. And there, because of our agricultural industry needing chemicals, a lot of the cosmetic industries don't want to buy American beeswax. It has residuals in it that they don't want to use in their face products. So if, you know, beekeepers can work with the Kentucky Organics Society, and get their being certified organic, then there's a market there for beeswax in the cosmetic industry, absolutely.
Again, we've been talking with Dr. Tammy Horn Potter, and thanks so much for your time. And certainly we look for people to take a serious look at honey production as a new enterprise on their farm here this year and in the coming years.
All right. Well, great. Thank you so much for having me as your guest.